Good evening and welcome everyone. Let us all stand for the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Someday. All right. Okay, thank you. May we have a roll call, please?
Yes, good evening, commissioners.
I'll
take the roll call, please. Chair Hartwig?
Yes, present.
Vice Chair Hurd?
Present.
Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner Griggs Murphy?
Present.
Commissioner Montgomery?
Present.
And Commissioner Jung Lee?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, next item is approval of minutes, first from February 22nd regular meeting.
I'll make that motion.
We have a motion.
I'll second.
Seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Good.
Here.
Carries unanimously. Then we have the February 27 special meeting, minutes of the special meeting.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second it.
Moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All those opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Old or unfinished business?
There is none.
There is none. Okay. Then we have, let's move to the speaker cards tonight. Are there any modifications to the agenda? I have none, since no one else has any. Good, then we'll move on to new business, item A.
Item A is recognition of Public Housing Executive Director Association, FADA, scholarship participants. We have a number of participants and their families here to be recognized by the Board of Commissioners for completing the application process. Lenita Wheeler is going to come on up, if she can, and do some introductions. And I don't know, Sonia, are you going to help? And if we can have the commissioners come up in front, and we'll get a picture at the end of the awardees.
Yes.
Let's come down.
We're all going to go down there.
Okay.
Good evening, Commissioners. Lenita Wheeler, Director of Family and Community Partnerships Department. We are here this evening desiring to recognize OHA students who have excelled in their academics and extracurricular activities. They each applied for the FADA scholarship, as Director Johnson has already mentioned. The scholarships that they applied for range from $5,000 to $7,000. They had the opportunity to apply for one or two. And the students had to be a PHA resident, have a minimum 3.0 grade point average, seeking to enroll in college, and were also required to submit letters of recommendation from their schools. FCP supported individuals with completing their applications, and we submitted two individuals to represent the Housing Authority with FADA. They will find out sometime this month who the awardees for the scholarship are, and those who win will get a trip for themselves and one parent or guardian to attend the convention that will be hosted in May of this year in Las Vegas. And so we have a handful of our students and families who are here today, and we would like to acknowledge them. I'll share you with a bit about them. Sonia Wright, our resident community services coordinator in the Family and Community Partnerships Department, has been working closely with our families and our scholarship, as well as our education intern, Ms. Nicole Gatson. They will be assisting with handing out the certificates and the gift bags that we have for them. And so each of our students will receive a gift card. And if you'll just come up as we announce your name, you'll be handed your certificate and gift bag, and if you could stand with our commissions here. The first student who we'd like to acknowledge is a Mr. John Park. John is a golf coach at Lake Chabot Junior Golf Academy. He's attending Alameda High School, and has a 4.03 grade point average. Our next student is Ala Sheree. She likes to volunteer, is attending Connecting Waters Charter School, has over a 3.6 GPA, and is looking forward to majoring in geography and Arabic at the College of Alameda and Merritt. Miss Corrine Titus, who is a lead student organizer at Youth Together. She attends Emory Secondary School. She's interested in majoring in journalism and has applied to San Francisco State, Sacramento State, CSU East Bay, and San Jose State Universities. We would also like to recognize someone who has just stepped in. Miss Jasmine Bryant. She plays the saxophone, is in the dance and the step team. She attends James Logan High School, is interested in majoring in psychology, and has applied to Spelman University as well as Mississippi Valley State University. And we would also like to recognize Chidubem Wata. He's a member of the Young Scholars Program who attends Skyline High School. His major is yet undeclared, which is still okay. And he has applied to the bulk of our UC schools, UC Berkeley, UC Santa Barbara, UC Davis, UCLA, as well as Langston University and Tuskegee. And then we also have a Ms. Sarah Tran, who is a community volunteer and the member of student leadership, who attends Oakland Military Institute College Prep. Her GPA is 4.28, and she will be majoring in neuroscience and genetics. And the two students who were recommended to represent the Housing Authority with FADA. The first is an Emily Hassan. She is a volunteer at Child Evangelism Fellowship. She attends the Envision Academy High School, is looking forward to majoring in sociology. And then also Chaz Colston. Chaz is an after-school academic assistant at the Golden Gate Preparatory Academy, and his high school that he attends is the Aspire Golden Gate College Preparatory Academy. He will be majoring in ethnic studies and philosophy. We have several students who weren't able to attend this evening. We would still like to acknowledge them by just calling out their names. Amina Hamden, Richard Nguyen, Matthew Lee, Jane Nguyen, Heather Pima Wilson. We'd also like to recognize family members and loved ones who supported our students throughout their high school careers and academic lives, as we know that this is a community endeavor, and we would like to acknowledge you all as well. So any family members that are here of our students, we'd love for you to stand so we may recognize you as well.
Can we even see Commissioner Castillo?
Hot off the press, Chaz actually won one of the five scholarships. That is awesome. Oh, that's great. Thank you all.
I want to thank all the families for coming. And just a note, we have had our residents win and our students win. And I would tell you, this is a national competition. And I can name... I would be hard-pressed to name any housing authority that has won more than once, and I think we've won 3 years in a row now. Woo! Congratulations. We just beat out 3,400 other housing authorities, and God knows how many. That would be twice as many applicants for this scholarship.
And on behalf of the commission, I want to congratulate every one of you. This is really a wonderful thing to see. Okay, so now we are going to move on to item B.
Item B is a recommendation to adopt the fiscal year 2017 Move to Work Annual Plan and Certifications of Compliance. This is our annual planning process. This is our annual plan. It has been out for public review. Public hearing has been held. We have received some comments from our resident advisory board and as well one letter from East Bay Community Law Center. And I would like to turn over to Dominica Henderson, our Director of Planning, Implementation, and Compliance, to give a brief report on the comment before we take action. Dominica?
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners. The next three items, the next three items that are on your agenda will be discussed in this presentation. We will go over the final drafts of the fiscal year 2017 MTW annual plan, the administrative plan, and the ACOP. We had a public comment period for the MTW plan, the admin plan, and the ACOP, and we also had some, as Mr. Johnson mentioned, we had some comments that we received on each of those plans. And so I'll go through the changes that we've made since the public comment period began, and then we'll discuss the comments that were submitted. The MTW plan, as required in our MTW agreement, is divided into six different sections. We provide an overview of our plans for how we intend to operate our housing programs during the fiscal year. The MTW plan that we're seeking approval for today will begin on July 1st, 2016, and will go through June 30th, 2017. We also had a public comment period for the administrative plan. The admin plan is the policy document for the Housing Choice Voucher Program. It provides the oversight and the guidance that is used in order to operate the programs. We also include some information about some of the local programs that are also operated by the Leased Housing Department. This year's admin plan, you'll see many changes around the MTW landlord activities that we are proposing in the MTW plan. And we also are including recent changes that were implemented as a result of the regulatory changes that were released and published on March 16th in the Streamlining Administrative and Regulations Final Rule. The ACOP is the policy document and the guidance that is used for the public housing program. So it is a similar document to the admin plan, except it is only for the public housing program. This year's ACOP refines certain activities just to ensure that we are effectively implementing our already approved MTW activities in the ACOP. And we also have included some changes that were recently implemented as part of the Streamline Final Rule. The public comment period began on February 3rd and ended March 4th, 2016. We received one letter from East Bay Community Law Center. We also received two oral comments from the RAB, and so we incorporated those into each of the appropriate documents. So if you look, we have the two comments that are from the RAB are included in the actual MTW plan as part of that section, the RAB section. And then we include the letters and the comments that were submitted from the East Bay Community Law Center in each of the memos for the admin plan and the ACOP. We incorporated sections of the streamlining final rule as well, because there were a number of activities that had been announced over the past 2 or 3 years but had not yet been finalized. And so we basically codified what we saw as a policy that was being implemented by HUD, but it took several comment periods and responses from them in order to finally incorporate the final rule policies. This chart is a little squished, but basically it's just an overview of the comments that we received, both from the RAB and then from the East Bay Community Law Center. So those comments are enlarged, as I mentioned, in your memos. The RAB had a question, a RAB member had a question about the disposition, where we discussed disposition in the MTW plan, and wanted to ensure that disposition did not mean demolition of the sites. And so we clarified that for her, and then also made sure to provide that clarifying response in the plan. And additionally, we had a comment and a suggestion from a RAB member to provide stipends and allow RAB members to represent the housing authority at different meetings, public meetings, to incentivize landlords to participate in the Section 8 program. The rest of the comments 3 through 9, are pertain to the ACOP and the admin plan. They are the comments that were submitted from the East Bay Community Law Center. And so we provide the citation with which the comment was submitted, and then we also provide a response. Many of the comments that we received, we responded to by incorporating those suggestions, or we explained that the current policy is compliant with HUD regulations, and so we move forward with not incorporating those comments at this time. Oops, I'm sorry. We also just have this chart which outlines the changes that were made as a result of the streamlining final rule. And basically what the streamlining final rule is regulatory changes that haven't yet been incorporated into the Code of Federal Regulations, but they are effective this week because HUD released them last month, and the effective date was 30 days after they were published. So a number of them are just programmatic changes that have been incorporated across the board for all housing authorities, whether they're MTW or not. And so we have charted out for you those changes that we made. There were some, because of the streamlining rule, there is an MTW activity that we have, which is buy-in or risk-based inspections. But as a result of the streamlining rule, HUD has incorporated the biennial inspections as a part of the traditional program now. So whereas we were using an MTW waiver to do risk-based inspections and have biennial inspections, now we don't have to do that. And so we're rethinking our risk-based inspections activity, because HUD has, what I presume it has happened, is that HUD has seen the benefits of having biennial inspections as opposed to annual inspections, and so they've incorporated that as a programmatic change for all agencies to benefit from. So as we can see, we often say that the MTW program is the housing policy lab, and so we see that we tested an activity, and then it took a little while for HUD to incorporate it as a part of the traditional programs, but we're seeing that the effect of the activities that we're conducting on a daily basis being applied to all the rest, the other 3,300 agencies.
It was interesting when we were doing the extension and we were fighting for that for the past 2 years. One of the biggest arguments we had on the Hill was that virtually every improvement to the Section 8 program or the public housing program was demonstrated by a move to work agency prior to HUD believing it worked. And then HUD filled it up through their own changes. And it also allowed them to get approval for things that they were not necessarily getting a lot of support on the Hill, because they could turn and say, but Oakland, Chicago, Philadelphia, Baltimore are all doing it this way, and there's no problem. And if you recall on my many reports about our audits, there was one time we had the OIG come on board for 7 months. One of the things they did during the 7 months, and the principal point of them being here, was they relooked at all of our inspections, every single inspection, over the period of a year to determine whether or not our risk-based was actually letting units deteriorate or not, came back with virtually nothing at the end of that. And that report went to the Hill.
So that concludes my presentation on the admin plan, the MTW plan, and the ACOP. I'm happy to take your questions if you have them specific about the specific documents or the letter that was received from the East Bay Community Law Center.
I think it's just a comment. I believe that the current rental crisis has asked us to think creatively about how to keep our residents and how to keep our landlords, and the MTW ability to have that status allowed us to incorporate some of those creative ideas in the MTW plan. And I think that that is such an incredible benefit to being an MTW agency, is to be able to think outside of the box and create some really good landlord incentives into the plan. And I'm truly hoping that they will make a difference. Thank you so much.
Anything else? Do you have a question? Yes, sure. So, okay, go right ahead. I didn't see anyone else raise their hand.
Yeah, I just have some comments. As always, I have comments. But, Dominica, I enjoy reading your report. It's always very informative and well done. Just a couple comments. I was really pleased in seeing the rent reform pilot program and what we're doing with that, Director. On page 41, the rent pilot program.
We all have to do rent reform. It's not been our strongest suit. We were just talking about it this afternoon.
Yeah.
We've gone to, rather than annual recertifications, triennials. It saves us money. It saves our participants a lot of grief because they don't have to come every year. The majority incomes don't change. There are other agencies in the country that are doing much more aggressive things around rent reform. I don't really support that much. I really like the idea of having income-based rent.
Thank you.
And so I'm not being a big advocate as what some other agencies in the country have done. Do you have anything else?
No.
Okay. My other comment, page 45, the eliminate caps in the PBV allocations. I was glad to see that. Glad to see that. Thank you. And my other comment. The redesign of the FSS program. We've done a lot of phenomenal work in the FSS, and in reading that, again, kudos, Lenita, to the work you're doing in FSS, and all the work we're doing to help our residents, our seniors, our disabled community, our youth. I mean, it's just great. And as I read that, I'm just, again, pleased with what we're doing as an agency. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Those are all my comments.
Yes, go ahead.
Yes, according to the East Bay Law Center's email, did I understand you to say that this does concur with the changes that were made? Or
we agreed with a number of the changes. There were a couple that we didn't. Do you want to go over what we didn't
sure.
agree with?
Yeah.
There were a number of changes that the East Bay Community Law Center suggested that were clarifications of the existing regulation. And so what we did was just made sure that we were, we made the correct citation and informed the East Bay Community Law Center that we intend to comply with whatever the federal regulations are. So oftentimes in the ACOP and the admin plan are very long, 400-500-page documents. And so in the revisions, part of the citations will be there from the Code of Federal Regulations, but part of the entire policy will get deleted or somehow revised. And so we just made sure we went through to clarify that we intend to comply with federal regulations in all those instances, and went through the documents too in those areas that they highlighted. There was another comment that they made regarding HQS inspections. That is, they reminded us that HQS inspections are to be conducted annually, and we let them know that we're an MTW agency, so we don't conduct them annually. And now, as part of the streamlining, as I mentioned, they'll be on a biennial schedule. So that was one of the areas where we retained the existing policy. And
there were a couple others they made that we didn't, you know, if you go to comment 9, for example, there was a PIH notice. That's how they issue the rules for us, that their comment didn't really consider, so we couldn't do it anyway. We just didn't get. Some of them were choices, some of them in terms of the informal settlement agreements, we looked at their suggestions. We're not required to do it. We don't think it's in the best interest to do it. Okay. So we're just saying we considered them, and we did consider them, and we appreciate their review, but there are a couple of them from the person who did the review that we just don't necessarily agree with. Okay. And in that case, it always says where we retain the proposal language, that means we're not going to make their edits or changes. We don't agree with the change. And you'll see a couple of those in item number 7 and item number 8 where we didn't agree.
Okay. Yes, for the most part, they asked us to repeat certain language. And so we just choose not to do that, but we do fully incorporate the regs. Yeah, we cite the CFR and fully incorporate the regs and the policies so that we're covered.
Okay. It's good to know that someone else, you know,
we always get a great review from someone, and I also appreciate the legal advocacy community because they get together and they do one letter, which makes it really easy for all of us because we wait for the letter to see what they get, and they proof our work, which I really appreciate. They catch things that we may not have missed, so it's always a valuable thing to put it through public comment. There are times where we know things that they don't, like the notices. They don't read the hundreds of notices we do, so we may be making a change just because of a notice that they weren't aware of. They really review it against the CFR, the Code of Federal Regulations. They like to have the language put into our plan. We think it gets burdensome and sometimes redundant, so we don't do it. We just cite the CFR.
Okay. Awesome.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit on page 69? It says establish site-based wait lists at all public housing sites, Hope 6 sites, and developments that have PBV allocations. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a little bit about what led to this change in policy and what you think are the benefits from it?
That is one of the oldest activities that we have.
It's
one of the first ones that was created.
And if you look at the activity number when it says 06, that was created in 2006, 10 years ago.
Okay.
And it was our activity number
really
one.
Behind the times.
It's an interesting question.
But
why would we choose this? We chose it because under the old public housing model, you had citywide wait lists, and you had to give 3 offers. And often people would be applying because they wanted to live in Lockwood, and then they wouldn't get offered Lockwood. So there was a big spinning of the wheels.
Saves a lot of time.
The applicants were really disappointed because they weren't able to apply for the specific site. So that was the first one we did. We had a big debate with HUD when we were, and this wasn't in 2006, a couple years later, which is when I was here, which is when we had the big debate. They weren't certain whether we really needed an MTW authority to do this. Mm-hmm. But we told them we wanted the shelter of an MTW authority. And so we started doing site-based wait lists. In our scattered site portfolio, as you know, it's geographically into 6 different wait lists. So anyone applying can apply to all 6 or any ones that they choose. It allows them to select the areas, and then it also allows us to have specific wait lists for Lockwood Gardens, Campbell Village, and the senior sites all separate. Allows people to choose which ones they're going to be on. And for those portfolios, what it does is really lessen the number of families who come in, put through the eligibility process, determined to be eligible, then get offered a unit they had never had any intention of accepting. So it allows people to be very specific. We're a fairly small geography in the city, so it works out really well. If we were larger, I don't know that it would as much, but we let people select where they want to live. And for the majority of our units, they're in, you know, in certain pockets. But
sure.
But the biggest thing was to try and have an administrative savings of, say, for example, you have 100 people you pull off the wait list to do eligibility, and you process, you have 54 families come in. Out of the 54, you get, say, 45. You're eligible, go look. So then we send them to their units, and they don't want the unit. So it becomes a whole exercise of cost and burden on both them and us. And so I do think it's helped. I think our complaints have gone down enormously from the applicants.
And I think I would mention, too, that it's one of the few activities that we have that applies to all of our programs. So usually what the MTW activities do is request a waiver from federal regulations to do something different and a local program. So usually they apply either to Housing Choice Voucher or to the public housing program, and this one applies across the board. So our public housing sites and our PBV sites, as well as the, our public housing sites and our PBVs all benefit from this activity.
And then the other great thing that I think about doing it this way, and was in our initial justifications with HUD to continue it, is it allows wait lists to be open periodically. Mm-hmm. One of the problem we had is that the public housing wait list or the Section 8 wait list would open, and then we would close it, and 10 years later we would open it again.
Yeah.
What this does is get more frequent opening and closings. It's very much in line with the PBRA program and others where they open their site-based and they open for short periods more often. And what it does is give more families the access to housing, because right now there are no wait lists open. But there's a chance we could open, and we have three bedrooms for this portfolio or that portfolio, and also for our project-based partners. What that allows us to do is get more direct, a closer connection between the people who are desperately in need of housing and the existence of housing. One of the biggest complaints, I think, of even the Section 8 program has been over the years that you apply in 2000, and in 2015 you get called in.
Right.
The disconnect between the need and the housing and the length of time. And I think the shorter we can get toward being realistic, even when we did the lottery, if you remember, we did a lottery for the first time and people were nervous about it. And I personally called everybody who complained. That's how few complaints we got, for one thing.
Okay.
But the reason is I wanted them to really understand that I had a choice. I could either take the 54,000 applicants and say, we're going to lotterize that down to 10,000, and there's a good chance we'll get to you the next 3 to 5 years. But would you rather me keep the 54,000 families and in 20 years be pulling Ms. Jones off the wait list and never have a wait list open, never have another shot at it?
Yeah.
And everyone I talked to understood that, and we really got no complaints because they understood the idea is to try and get the housing to the people when they need it as soon as possible. And we built this structure that just kicked the football down the field.
Right.
And we're trying to stop that and get more in real time. And I think the wait list does it, and I think lotterizing also does it.
So when I was at Ebalse for a good chunk of time, this wasn't in place, so it's really good to see that it is implemented now. I'm just behind the times.
Well, we also do mention on page 13 and table 9, we mentioned which wait lists we expect of the sites we expect to be open during the year.
Yeah.
So we also give folks a heads up as to which wait list, which bedroom sizes that we expect to solicit responses from applicants.
And some of the benefits of that was our Second Avenue senior property. Remember, we had 34 units designated for seniors who were participating in a homeless services program and go right into a permanent unit. We couldn't have done that without this authority.
Yeah, that's great. Then I have a second question about, and I can't find the page it's on right now, but it was for those participants, I think it was in Housing Choice, if they are working, it allows a period within 40, 48 months. It was initially 44 months, and now it's shortened to 24
no,
months.
No, it was initially 12 months under the CFR.
Oh, okay.
And what we had were residents who would get to what we call zero HAP families, families who don't have any monetary assistance, but they still, if they had a loss of income, can come back in the program and get some assistance. That's a deterrent for people leaving me very fearful when they hit.
Right.
And so
especially
they,
in today's
and
market.
They moderate their income. We don't want to have that happen. So we lengthened it to 24. Just so anytime during, if you're zero HAP, you have 24 months. At any point, if you have a family has a loss of income of any kind that puts them back eligible, they come back to the program. I think the longer that runway is, the better we are. And so I understand exactly the point of your question, if it, you thought it was the reverse. Okay. I wouldn't be opposed to extending it. We have gotten some criticism from HUD about the fact that we've gone to 24 because we're not providing any assistance, even though they're family served. And I, my point is, I don't know that it makes any difference because if they're over the income threshold, in particularly in Section 8, we don't count them anyway. It just allows them to come back if they need us. And I think
without
that
going through the whole waiting process.
Yeah, and,
thank
and,
you.
And that gets back to to the policy choice of trying to end the cycle. You got to break the cycle. And the cycle is if a family exits our program and they have something happen, it could be something as simple as a medical emergency that lasts for a month or two, that family could end up back in, back not in the program, back without assistance and losing their housing. And then you have the challenge and the cost of taking the family back into the whole program and hoping they can get back into the voucher program and the cost it takes. I mean, I'm always reminded of the statistic that flies around that seems very accurate, about $64,000 a year to keep a family homeless in services and uses, and $19,000 to house them with services. The savings and the policy decision around that is something that I think this really speaks to. We're trying to break the cycle. We want to be able to have families that we've served and taken so far to zero HAP that if something happens, they can re-enter our program before they become homeless, and we can get some assistance so that they're not going to be evicted for non-payment of rent.
That's great. I'm glad I read it wrong. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Are you finished?
Yes, I'm
good. Oh, okay, go ahead.
Commissioner, thank you. You gave me an opener just to share something that I thought was definitely brand new, but unusual. One of my seniors got a letter from Lions Creek Crossings. She made it on the application list, but she needs to submit in writing every 6 months to confirm her interest. And that's just like something brand new.
Could you set have her email? Could you get it an email? Put me
I'll
in contact.
I'll send you a picture of it right now.
Yeah. What purging a list or keeping it current is really a challenge of any management company. I don't know that I would like to see it to see if that's what's happening and talk to them. And I'll have Anna Kadanovskaya, who's not here, talk to the management company to make sure that's a process that we want to have along.
As you can imagine, it could be a burden on some folks who are every 6 months
absolutely.
To be have
and
to
what
submit.
We require on all our lists is that if you have a change of contact information, then you need to inform us because we're going to send you the notice to that address.
Exactly.
And then so you have to proactively inform us, and otherwise it goes to that address. But that's all you have to do. Otherwise, we keep it the way it is.
And it seems to be more work.
It seems like it would be more work for us because that person wants to confirm that they have that we've gotten their letter and that we're still on the list.
Yeah, let me see what I can.
It's very interesting.
Take a look at this. Thank you for.
Thank you, Commissioner, for giving me that opener.
Are there any more questions or comments or anything? In that case, you may.
Yeah, I'll move the item.
I'll second the item.
Okay. So this is item B. I think we need to do each one separately.
Yes, each
correct?
One separately.
Okay.
So this is item B, recommendation to adopt the fiscal year 2017 move to work annual plan
MTW
and certifications.
Plan, right. Okay. So it's been moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Abstentions? Hearing none, carries unanimously. Okay, then we are going on to item C, the ACOP.
Yes, item C is an adoption of a proposed changes to the emissions and continued occupancy policy for the public housing program.
Will you have a motion?
I have a motion on the table to approve, please.
Okay.
I second.
All right, moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstentions? Okay, carries unanimously. On to item D, the Housing Choice Voucher Administrative Plan.
Yes, adoption of a proposed changes to the administrative plan for the Housing Choice Voucher Program.
Motion to approve.
I'll second.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Okay, carries unanimously. I would just like to say a fine job done by all, and I would like to thank the RAB and all other organizations that had input into this, because that is how we keep getting better, by working with our entire community. So thank you all. And we will now move on to item D.
Item E, right?
E, yes.
Item E is a resolution approving a 3-year contract with 2 1-year option terms with the Oakland Private Industry Council for services connected to Jobs Plus Grant Award in the amount of $1,050,000 for a 4-year grant term. I would also note that we have a 4-year grant term, but the contract will have our standard 5 years in case there are extensions that are needed to facilitate the grant. This corresponds to the item that went last month about approval and acceptance of the money. It's a $2.7 million grant focused on public housing families in West Oakland, and I want to just recognize that Kay Cobb is here from the Private Industry Council, who has been a strong advocate for a very long time in Oakland to make sure that people have access to quality jobs and employment, and who has been a significant partner in bringing this $2.7 million into this city, and I'm grateful for her support and her guidance over these years. And that concludes my report, but I'm here for any questions.
Excellent. Questions, comments, move away.
I need to ask a question.
Oh, yes, go right ahead.
Yeah, I just want to know, what is the Job Plus Grant?
The Jobs Plus Grant is a competitive grant. It was originally a pilot program in the late 90s, or early 90s, actually. It was 1996, because it's been 20 years since I originally worked on a Jobs Plus Grant. And I was involved with the two pilots tangentially that were in Los Angeles. It then went away. Last year, the current secretary decided to refund it.
Yeah. Okay.
The concept behind the grant is it's job training and placement money, but it's a little different. It saturates the community and the residents with opportunity. And that's why I like it, because I believe, as you know, very strongly in place-based initiatives. And I believe that we need to really create a community that really supports work and brings opportunity to our families. West Oakland, we are serving non-contiguous sites. We are the first time in the history of this grant they've ever done that. They did award grants last year. We applied, but were not selected. At that time, it could only have served Peralta Villa. They changed the grant, and they allowed you to do non-contiguous sites. So we're going to have all public housing families in West Oakland, and that means Peralta, Mandela, Chestnut, Linden, and Campbell Village. And we will be doing great outreach events, and we'll be targeting the families. It will have a community coach program where residents are hired as community coaches, and they're the ones who actually are working more directly and regularly with the families for us to check in even after they're enrolled. But the concept is to bring the structures that it takes to really support a working family and make sure that our families have access to those structures in their communities. And one of the things that has motivated us to do this, particularly in West Oakland, facing such pressure in gentrification and moving, and there's opportunity in that as well. And I, you know, to the greatest extent that I could possibly make happen, I want to make sure that our public housing families, who have been passed over time and again and time and again during the gentrification process, the redevelopment that has gone through West Oakland, has not touched them in a way that it should. And what I want to do is make sure we use this funding and our partners to address those issues, to make sure that our families can participate in what is good about gentrification.
Yes.
So that is my mission. And I'm grateful to have partners and allies, and one pick being one, and Alameda County Social Services, who also attended the training in D.C. this year, this last month, on board and really focused in trying to do that.
Thank you.
I'll get off my soapbox.
Cool.
Comment? Question?
Yes.
Congratulations. Yes. Congratulations. Is it too early to ask about career tracks? Are we doing green jobs? Are we doing health jobs? Or
What are we going to be doing?
Yes, step on up.
If you can. Thank you.
Thank you. First of all, let me say what an honor it is to be working with the Housing Authority in this way. We've worked over the years together in other ways, I think, and also we've worked with some of you commissioners, so it's good to see all of you again. We are working right now in a very interesting model called Training to Work Initiative, and it's looking at various growth sectors as defined by some of our economic analysts in our regional economy, where we are working with employers very, very intensely in that they actually are designing the training along with us. They're actually providing the training, and then they're committed to hiring the residents. So we're looking so far at the food industry, technology, and we have actually a meeting this week around a construction cohort. So we're just, you know, rolling this model out, which is actually quite promising because of the very close employer involvement that we have.
What about green, solar, and you mentioned tech, right?
Mm-hmm.
Health. Any of those?
Some of the construction will be in green construction, but we are still, you know, adding different cohorts with different employers, so it's likely that we'll cover the basis.
And biotech.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, again, we're very, very pleased to be working with you. It's good to see all of you. I want to tell you what a tremendous staff you commissioners have in your Housing Authority staff. We've worked with, I don't know, many people in this room in different ways, both through the Workforce Investment Board and through other connections. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I will second the item that Vice Chair motion to approve.
Most excellent. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed or abstentions? Carries unanimously. So now we will move on to item F.
Item F is authorizing the executive director to write off $104,669.17 of tenants' account receivable deemed uncollectible for public housing rental units. This is going to become a very routine item, as I'd promised. And these are vacated towns accounts for more than 6 months. It doesn't mean that the tenants who vacated are off the hook. What it does mean is that the Housing Authority never considers them as real income, and we don't book any costs against them. So it's an exercise in sound fiscal accounting that conforms with HUD guidance. It doesn't mean the tenants don't have this recorded. It actually, when they leave the public housing program owing us money, it goes into HUD's PIC system, not the private industry council, but HUD's PIC system. And it needs to be reconciled and paid back prior to them receiving any other assistance from HUD. And we do get some funding from that. But it's hopefully going to be a very routine thing in the period. You'll see it every quarter or 6 months. And Mark Schifferl is here for any questions, if you have any individual questions about the amounts owed or families.
I'd like to move the item, and I appreciate the lower amounts that I'm seeing, too. Thank you very much.
I'll second.
Okay, moved, seconded. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Little hesitation there. All those opposed? Abstentions. Okay, that carries unanimously. So now we will move on to item G, which is recognition of people wishing to address the commission. I have no speaker cards.
I have none.
Okay. So that means we are going to move on to written communications.
This has just gone so quickly tonight.
Smooth.
I want to thank all of the staff for making that a reality. First, you have the monthly written report. So if you have any questions about that, please let us know. You have the meeting schedule, and please note we're canceling the April 25th. We don't need a meeting in a couple weeks. So we're spared that by meeting in this special meeting. And I'll get an email and we'll post a notice. And then there's additional conferences that you have if you have any questions. I really just want to take a minute. There's three participants from the NOI cohort, I think, in the audience. Do you want to raise your hands? Yes. Don't be shy. Thank you guys for coming. Your presence and your willingness to participate in this in the 12-week course is so admirable. I hope you find it as wonderful as I think some of our graduates have found it. And I'm grateful that you take the time to come see who we are and what we're doing. Thank you. And moving on, if there's any questions about the report, do we want to do that? And then I'll move on with a few announcements. Hearing none, I'll move on. All right, we're into the next item. Item 8 is written. Yeah, this is a special executive director's report. So a couple things. The MTW extension, we are still waiting to hear the final language. There has been some comments from some MTW agencies that is wordsmithing, but it's going to be a one-page extension. My guess is we will put it through public comment and at least bring it to the board for sure. So we're trying to figure out if that is needed. Because it's an extension, last time we did an amendment, we did go through, I think it was 2011, we did put it out for public comment. Got no comments except for hurry up. And I would expect the same now. There are other jurisdictions that have different programs that people may comment on. So they, HUD may tell us to go back out to public comment. But I hope to get that done by the summer and have it locked down, and it would be an extension through 2028, which I think is lays the foundation of us continuing to really move out of the box and think differently and continue to move forward with things like the special needs committees, special programs that we're going to pilot, and then even expanding those in a different way. So I'm reinvigorated. I did see Dominic Bloom, who oversees this program as a deputy assistant secretary, and asked, and when I was in D.C. and we met for a while. But the main thing, my message to her is I want to get on with it. I'm tired about talking about this contract. Just get it done. I'm back excited about trying to affect change in HUD's programs and positive change for our residents. So, and I'm continuing to force that forward. I want you to know that we did complete an on-site review from HUD. This has to do with our MTW unrestricted assets, so that went well. We tended to agree at the end, and it was fine. It's what it is, and we're going to be able to move forward. There wasn't any dispute, really, in the amount. And they didn't seem at all concerned, so we're in good shape after the week they spent here. I also attended, as I mentioned, the Jobs Plus training March 22nd and 23rd. I really want to thank the PIC for sending someone, and also Andrea from County Social Services, who was able to attend as well. So we had a really great presence, and I think that's particularly important, and it's important to me because I want to go for another grant, and if we can do it this year, that's great. Otherwise, we may do it next year if we're not allowed to, for the Havens Court area, Lockwood Gardens, Lion Creek Crossing. So I think making sure we make this grant work and making sure that we get really terrific people working on it is important. And Nicole Thompson attended, and she's doing a great job getting it launched. And Lanita's been very, very diligently working with getting the contracts and the board reports in place. But we really want to make this a successful program for our residents, but also for us, because I want to go after $3 million more dollars. And yes, that was on the record. All right.
Yes, sir.
There's going to be an MTW conference on April 20th, 21st, and 22nd. This was, as you may recall, was originally started by OHA. And we went to Chicago to fight through some stuff with our other local agencies. We've used it since then to go to D.C. and really do some advocacy up on the Hill. And we did a number of meetings with legislators, and the staff would come down in the bottom of the Capitol and talk about the MTW program and explain it. That became invaluable in getting the appropriations bill passed with the language that protects the program. It is going on. There's not much in risk in D.C., so I'm not attending NARA or CLOF or anything. I'm going to go to this one because this is the one where I've been going, and I don't want to travel that much. So I will be attending. A lot of other staff will be attending as well, hopefully learning, bringing back really good ideas. And we'll be talking about some of the challenges that we're all facing, as well as some comment letters to HUD on what they're doing. So that's going to be in April. And as I mentioned, we're not going to have the April 25th meeting. We are moving forward with the RFQ for project-based vouchers for in-place, for existing units. And there will be a provision in that for vouchering families in place. So if you look at the monthly report, we're under-leased in our Section 8 program about 900 households. We have about 400 people searching. We hope they find. I know. It's rough. So what we want to do is try and, again, find innovative ways MTW can work for our families. The RFP is one way. So if we can voucher current families in place who are housed and get them rental assistance, that is one way. We are also going to have a second RFQ, and that's request for qualifications, to entertain the idea of doing SROs. So we can start assisting SROs. It's the first time we've had the MTW authority, I think, since 2006 or 7, I can't remember, but for a very, very long time. And we're going to try it out and see what we can do. There are a lot of nonprofits who run decent SRO programs and have that type of housing, and it's an amazing resource. We were looking at a property that was being listed for sale. It had Section 8, some of them were ours, and then it had unassisted, and then they had one building over to the side that was SRO. And so I got to see all the rent rolls and the term of tenancy, and I thought, what an amazing resource that really is. People were renting apartments, and this was in sort of the San Antonio-ish area. They were renting apartments for like $500, $400 a month in the SROs. And I thought, that is priceless in this world right now. How we can stabilize those properties and preserve them, and there's been a lot of talk both at the county level and at the city level about some of the SROs and how we can stabilize them. This could go a long way if people want to get innovative. So we're going to open that up as part of an RFQ and see what we can come up with. It's another kind of exciting thing because we've never done it. Yeah.
Are you looking at motels as well?
We haven't defined it that way. What leased housing is currently grappling with, and it's taking us a lot longer than we should, but we want to make sure we vet it well. But that we want the RFQs to come out together, and part of it is defining what that unit has to have inside or outside. And I don't know what that's going to look like. And we have people far better at this than I, working on it in the agency, so they will propose kind of the different solutions, and we'll go. But it's not going to say motel. It's going to say what the unit has to have, and if that exists in a hotel motel situation, that's incidental. It's really what is in the unit and what is outside the unit, and the outside of the unit, do you have a place to prepare meals and that kind of thing? Is what they're grappling with, and the other one is inspections. It's one of those things where you start looking at it and you start unraveling the layers of the onion, and you realize it's really not as easy as you think walking in the door to make sure because we have to do HQS. If the HQS fail is in the kitchen and it's a common kitchen, does that mean all the units in the building therefore fail and go on abatement? There are a lot of different, so that's what they're grappling with.
What is the role that we're playing here? Is this looking at how to use subsidies in SROs?
Or this is looking at how you can use rental assistance, some form of rental assistance, which will probably, this will be a local program.
It won't be Section 8.
And we're trying to determine the level of subsidy we're going to provide, how we're going to provide it, and we want to do two things. We want to first try and serve the families, the people living in the units. Secondly, we want to try and preserve this as a resource for affordable housing in the city. And there's at least one property I know of in the city that is quietly being vacated, and everyone suspects it's either going to try and convert to a hotel or even to some sort of micro living unit because it's in a very, very, very choice position for that geographically. So they think that they could probably, you know, those little units in the city that they're building?
Yeah.
And it could be converted, and you're half a block from BART, and you're at Embarcadero quicker than if you lived anywhere else in the city. So there's been several calls I've got from different people in the neighborhood. We don't touch that property, no involvement in it. But it got me thinking about how we really could maybe play a role in preserving some of the properties for the long term to make sure that they stay affordable and stay what they are for the city, which is kind of a niche we haven't participated in, but really an opportunity for affordability. So that's it. It won't end in a Section 8 voucher, so there's going to be no way to convert it to a voucher to move out. It's going to be a local program that provides a rental assistance and two SRO units.
So, go ahead. Yes.
You were on the verge of saying something. If I could go after you.
Either way, I was curious if this was part of the term that I have heard naturally occurring affordable housing.
You just want me to say what I told you. I'm not going to say.
No.
It actually is. It's a piece of that. The bigger piece of that are some of the rent-controlled units that people have lived in for a long time. So that's really that.
Well, that's a different
niche to
thing,
me.
Though.
These are unregulated.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking.
And they're affordable.
About. Right. Okay.
And I just think that, and we're going to ask for services if they're serving a particularly special needs population. Where the services. And we'll see what we're going to throw the net out and see what we can get back.
So that is kind of interesting.
Try and do some preservation. Sorry. The other thing about the standard RFQ, though, that I really want to stress is that we're going to have a vehicle, and that goes for both RFQs. There will be a mechanism to voucher in place current families eligible for the program. And one of the big pressures everyone's saying, you know, that we hear all the time is what can we do for our existing families? If we can get participation in the Section 8 project-based program or local program for existing families and they're eligible, and through our regs and waivers, be able to voucher that family in place, provide them rental assistance to make sure we preserve it, plus we lock the unit down for 15 years of affordability, I think we can have an impact on preserving affordability and preserving really diversity within Oakland. So it's going to be an interesting experiment. And I'm hoping we get some takers back for the main reason of trying to preserve our families in place.
Yes.
I think they're both great ideas, and I'm glad that you're exploring both. Ebaltzi has done SROs. We've renovated SROs, mm-hmm. and they're not the best housing for people, mm-hmm. but it's a way to really reach to very low-income people.
Yes.
And I think if there's good common area space, a good kitchen, places where people can store their personal food and other items, and also a nice welcoming place where they can entertain guests, I think it meets a lot of needs.
I have been in conversations with several nonprofits who provide this over the past 2 years about doing something like this. But those are really good suggestions, and I'll make sure I pass that on to the group, Andres, because it's how you define them and what kind of properties we're going is really, I think, the make or break. And maybe we'll get kind of that list out to some of you to vet, because just on the side for comment before it comes here. The RFP will be issued, we're hoping, in a month, but you don't know. And then we're going to try and keep it open a long time.
Okay.
We're going to have it open, and then we're going to have an initial read, so that one date, and then keep it open, because we want people to really think about it and develop their projects. The other thing I wanted to mention is we're going to do non-contiguous sites.
Okay.
So you have to come a minimum of 10 units, but they don't have to be contiguous. They can be 3 units here, 4 units here, and 5 units here. That becomes really important if you look at the number of households that we serve currently and in the Section 8 program in single-family homes, and the number of people, investment firms who bought chunks of single-family homes within Oakland. We're hoping we're going to go after them. We're going to aggressively outreach to them and try and entice them in participating in the Section 8 project-based program. And even if they're on the tenant-based program now, just so we can preserve the units and help give some stability and security to the families in place.
Thank you. Could I make a comment? I'm glad we're moving in the SRO. When I got on the OHA wait list and came out of homelessness, I ended up in an SRO. And 644 CL Dellums is where I ended up, on the 7th floor. It was great, and we had, you know, a place where we could entertain people, where we could cook. It was just wonderful, and I loved it. So I'm really glad to hear we're moving into the SR. They're not bad. Mm-hmm. Just got to get them in the right place, right neighborhood. But thank you, Director, for sharing that. Glad to hear that.
Another great experience we can all walk through together.
Wonderful. Yes. Thank you.
The other thing I wanted to let you know is that the city has.
Sorry.
No problem. Any other questions on the RFQs? Then Two more announcements real quickly. The city is going to approve their project list for the NOFAs.
Okay.
We have letters ready to go out to the people they're going to approve right away, because there are several people who may want to submit applications for tax credits by June. So the leased housing department's going to try and get those out the day after they take the action.
Okay.
And then we're hoping to get proposals back immediately. They've been noticed that we're going to do this, so have their letters ready.
Okay.
And we want to try and get them to you in the May meeting so that they can include them in the tax credit application, which will position all the projects for higher points and bonus points when they submit, and maybe get some awards for the city. And finally, we have the ribbon cutting for Ave Vista, 460 Grand. As you know, it's Wednesday, April 6th at 11 a.m. We understand that Congresswoman Lee will be there and will be speaking, and I'm grateful for that and her support. So I hope to see you there and a lot of you there. It would be great.
Wonderful.
And that's all my report.
Thank you.
So have we now completed? Okay, so we've completed written communications and the report, right?
Yeah, we're on to reports of commissioners.
So now we have reports of commission committees.
Oh, committees.
Yes.
And I don't know, did I leave that? I thought I printed it and it's up in the printer.
Oh, but we're waiting.
But if you'd like to give the update, no, we scheduled it later this, we scheduled it this afternoon.
So, oh, we did? Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It's the 26th. We'll be
great.
There.
Yeah. I was waiting for a date for the special needs. Is that what you're talking
yes.
about? Okay.
Yeah. Do you wanna?
So, Chair, that's when we'll be meeting next for special needs, April 26th.
Okay, so that meeting will be upcoming. Mm-hmm. No reports at this meeting. Next meeting, we
thank
will
you,
be Commissioner. Looking forward.
And do you want to talk about the budget committee or doing a budget session?
Oh, yes, I forgot about that. Right. So, okay, so we have the annual budget cycle coming up. And normally what we do is we form a budget committee to work on this. And then the budget committee presents its overall findings and judgment to the overall commission. One of the great values in having committees has always been bringing new commissioners, elevating their understanding of OHA much more rapidly. But since we don't have any new commissioners this time,
we do.
No, no.
She
not.
Was, I think, last time. She was on
No. We don't have a new. No.
Throughout your idea.
She was on the budget committee
yep.
last time.
Oh, right.
So
yep.
no new commissioners
okay.
that are new
okay.
commissioners. Okay. So so what I'm suggesting is that we have OHA give the full board a presentation of the financials. So we're going to kind of all be involved with it. It'll be. Hopefully, a one-shot deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason that I think that this is a good way to go is that the budget process here has every year gotten better and better and better, and it is really running smoothly now. And so I'm really not sure that we really need multiple committee meetings. So I think we'll give this a try, and we will see how efficient and spectacular mm-hmm. it is. So if there's no avid disagreement to this, we'll just roll with that new format.
Yeah, and so we'll schedule a budget workshop. It'll probably be the first or second Monday of May. We're hoping the first, so that we have time to finalize the presentation and board report. And then it would come to full board approval at the end of
okay.
May on the 22nd.
That's a good idea. But I'm sorry. Clarification, is this Monday like half a day or something?
No, it's the same. It'll be in the evening, just like now. It'll
so
start
it will
at 6.
Part of our,
it'll start at 6,
meeting?
And it will only, yeah, it'll be a special meeting. It'll be only a budget workshop. There won't be any action items. If we don't have a quorum, then we don't have a quorum, and it's not a problem because you're not going to take any action.
We're not going to vote.
But that way, anyone who wanted to come and participate, if it's everyone, that's wonderful. And what we'll do is focus the presentation on the changes year over year
mm-hmm.
and a couple of our new.
Sure.
New, we're doing a few changes related to organizing family community partnerships, creating economic development units so that we can really focus on resident employment and resident empowerment
okay.
around that. So we'll highlight those and kind of walk through the big one sheet, and then we'll come back 3 weeks later and
sorry, guys.
And do the final approval.
I agree with you.
Okay, good.
Good idea.
All right. I appreciate the enthusiasm for this format here. That's great. Okay, so we will go with that. You know, and as Eric said, it's going to be voluntary. So you have the choice of coming or not.
Great.
Very good. Okay.
Item 10.
So then now we're going on to announcements by commissioners. Mm-hmm. What? Oh, yes, where is that? Right here. Well, why don't you make the announcement? Okay. So I will just say that the commission has received a really wonderful card over here from Betty, and just a very cheerful, joyful Easter card. And I was asked to make sure that we made everyone aware of this most thoughtful gesture. Okay, so do we have any other announcements?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Thank you so much to Community Partnerships and Sean for helping us facilitate the RUN meeting, which stands for Residents United Network. I think it was an incredible day of advocacy and learning about how to push affordable housing at the state level. I'm hoping that we have seniors, we do have seniors, and other residents coming with us on April 12th to Sacramento. And I was talking to the director recently about how that would be an incredible way to engage our residents, is to get them involved in policy making. And I think the Residents United Network is an incredible step forward in that piece. We were at Sacramento last week on Tuesday for two bills. One was Senator Tony Thurmond's bill to free up Social Security, the state portion of Social Security, SSID. I'll have you know that it passed. So that is absolutely incredible, so that our seniors will get some relief. Though it's very minute, it is the door opener to hopefully better benefits for our seniors. What didn't pass was the Homeless Bill of Rights, the civil rights bill that was stopped because there were 86 cities against it. 86 cities. So it's an uphill battle, because no matter how many affordable housing units that we have, we still have people sleeping outside. Many, many people must sleep outside, and our cities use very mean ways to just try to get them out of our sight. And so that is our push at the state level to help decriminalize homelessness. We are going back up on April 28th to support the Social Security bill. And through community partnerships and hopefully Sean, we can actually invite some of our OHA seniors on the bus to Sacramento to help push it through that appropriations committee, which is the hardest one of all. So I'm hoping to really engage with our residents more at this level. I'm so happy to have them on board. Thank you.
Very cool. Do we have any more announcements?
Yeah, I have a couple.
Okay.
I was gonna wait. Any other commissioners?
No, go right ahead.
Okay, so bear with me. I just have a couple of announcements, but please bear with me. First thing I want to say is I want to thank OHA, because since coming out of homelessness, I've been able to accomplish so much being under OHA. Yeah, I'm just so grateful. So April 30th, I'll be graduating from the UC Berkeley Labor School. I'll be graduating from the NSCO Dellums Leadership School. So taught me a lot about labor, organizing unions. Ooh, love that. Next month, I'll be graduating, getting my real estate degree. Thank you.
Oh, wow, really?
Merritt College. Nice. That's going to happen. So again, Oh, I tell you, you guys have been a blessing to me. Two other points. I attended a meeting with at Supervisor Miley's office, where he is. He gave a presentation about the county housing bond, and yes. Commissioners, you all have copies of this. And in your handouts, you'll see the upcoming meetings that the county will be hosting at the county office. Just to give you some input, and director, if anyone in the public wants to get these, they can go online and get them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And two more announcements. At the Peralta Colleges, we received our Peralta Colleges Student Council received a presentation from OUSD, and they were looking to enlist our students to become mentors or tutors. And what they did, they played a presentation, and OHA was on there. I was so surprised. I didn't even know, and I believe we have it. Are we going to play that real quick? Oakland Community Schools. OHA, you're making a difference. I love you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
We are college ready, career ready.
And we're ready for that community too.
We're ready.
We're ready.
Estamos listos.
We're ready.
I think education is like the key thing. In my mindset, I can't do nothing without education.
When we came here, I remember they asked us who wanted to go to college, and everyone was just like, nah, no thanks. Now it's not even a question. There's no other thought.
When I look around the school every day, I see success. Kids who were written off, I see kids who were told they could not do what they are showing they can do, and I see a community who are proud of these kids.
College ready.
I'm college ready. Career ready.
Career ready.
Community ready.
I'm ready.
We're dealing with the student, the family, and the community, because that's what ensures academic growth.
There's a lot of things that need to be in place for a child to sit down and be ready to learn.
I think that's what any parent wants for their kid, is a school that's really there to meet their needs on not just a surface level, but actually going very deep into what the family and the student needs.
Yes, we look at the child as a whole person. The education needs first, their physical well-being, the emotional well-being.
Community schools allow us to meet kids' needs so that they can stay in the classroom, and it allows teachers to further challenge kids because they're being supported. You can be more rigorous with them because they can handle it.
When I took the school 6 years ago, the API score was in the low 500s, and now we're actually pushing 750, and that would not have been possible without the number of community partners that have made investments.
I mean, we have tons and tons and tons of partners.
Oakland Housing Authority partners with the school district.
We have the Asthma Mobile.
The After School Program.
Adult Education.
Skill Building.
How to be prepared for an interview.
Our Dental Service.
If kids can't get glasses, they give you a program for glasses.
School Site Counselors.
Mental Health Coordinators.
Trauma Circles.
We have a Read 180 Program.
Angel Network.
Reading Intervention for our students.
Internships.
College Access Groups.
The Farmers Market.
Tax Prep. We do clothing drives.
Free backpacks.
Mentorship.
A dad's club.
You come and get everything that you need in order to move forward right here on campus.
We have school community managers at sites now to help us bring in more resources to help families.
We start coordinating services before the school year even begins. We meet together, talk about what services we absolutely need to have, and then we work to make sure that that can happen here. There's a whole lot of work that's going to go into helping a student be successful, and we all need each other to do that.
So data has clearly indicated that the school sites that actually have high parent participation, students perform better.
Since the school has placed an actual parent center on campus, parents can come into the center, which is their space. Just building community.
You see a lot of parents walking around, taking ownership of their schools, and that means a lot to families where they can walk around and say, oh yeah, I did that.
If parents have a question about how a class is run, they're more than welcome to come sit in a class. Just like the community partners are more than welcome to come sit in classrooms and see how things are done. A general openness that the whole school has, when you bring in other organizations, you bring in families, it changes the whole feeling of the school.
It becomes like a magnet, and others want to be part of it.
This school, yes, is a huge, huge part of my life. And really, it is community for me.
My eyes are open more to the community, not so much the community being violent, but there are real people that live in a community, you know. There are real people with so many talents and skills, they just need to come out.
When I think about a student who is dealing with severe trauma just because of deaths in their family, and they're on the verge of dropping out of school, and when we can give them the services they need to keep them away from that, keep them in school and studying, it changes the whole dynamic of their life and of our community.
Our school, even though it's surrounded by all this chaos, it feels somewhat to be the safest place. We come to school to learn, and this is what we're gonna do.
Rather than have students shutting down and not learning, we have students who know that there are people on this campus who truly care about them and care about whether or not they make it.
In the beginning, I thought it was more of high expectations, but we didn't have a lot of the partnerships and support. So now when we have all the different partnerships, it's a way of saying, I expect you to be up here, but I'm also giving you people and resources to be able to reach that level.
My son already asked me, so after fifth grade, I'm going to middle school, then high school, and then college. I'm like, yeah.
Our average GPAs are higher, even though our instruction is more rigorous. Our kids' reading levels are growing at a higher rate.
I believe that if we invest in our youth, send our youth off to college so they can get degrees and bring those degrees and that knowledge back to the hood, then we can change our community and our neighborhoods.
I'm ready.
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 It can work. I've seen it work. I know it works.
We're ready.
Thank you. Thank you. So just two more points here. I just had a lot of good news here. I'm sorry, but two more points. So I will be going to the NARL conference. I know Patricia's going, Jair's going, and having an opportunity to go see the new acting secretary of education, John King, and I want to take our information from Greer. Thank you for preparing these. And just sharing with them at the national level how we're really making a difference, how we're not just an average housing authority. We're really a community partner, and we're really expanding and doing wonderful work in the community, and we're changing lives. And the secretary needs to hear that. He needs to hear that. Okay, the last thing I want to say, in my labor school, we were taught about one of the major strikes in 1968, the AFSCME strike with the sanitation workers who were grossly underpaid, who struck 65 days, and Dr. King helped them. And so today, in honor of Dr. King was murdered on April 4th for going down to Memphis, Tennessee, walking with the AFSCME sanitation union workers because they were grossly underpaid. And they shot him on April 4th in the face on the balcony. I think you all know that, so a moment of silence, please. April 4th, this is the day that he was murdered for his good works of nonviolence and helping the poor community. Please, can we just have a moment of silence in honor of Dr. King for his work, his labor of love. Our world, our communities. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
It's all the news. Great, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have any further announcements? All right, then our next item is to adjourn for closed session. Closed session, so.
Oh, motion.
Second
yes,
that motion.
Motion, second. We're good. We'll take 5 minutes.
Okay.